You know, I'd say, I don't know how long it's been, but it's been more than a few years. But there was a time not that long ago, I never even heard of a man named Melvin Brown. And I didn't even know that he was involved with Roswell. And he maybe wasn't the biggest name involved with it, but he certainly was somebody that has become over the years influential as far as what he knew. And it really wasn't from him so much as we've discovered. It was from his family, and that was after he passed. So my buddy Art is back with me again. He's down in Florida, and he's spent a good amount of time investigating and following the life of Melvin. How are you doing?
Pretty good, TJ. How are you doing?
Great. It's good to have you back. Now, the last couple times we talked about was your connection to Mike Brown and believing you maybe met Melvin at one point. And, of course, Melvin is one of the, I don't know how many witnesses that have come forward. Now, he didn't come forward when he was alive, but one of, I don't know, how many witnesses you think were involved that came forward from Roswell? Any idea, Art?
I know it's up in the hundreds if you look at the Roswell books that are out there, and I know some are probably second and third-hand witnesses. First-hand witnesses, I'm not sure, but probably a good 50, maybe.
So really, and it's a group that's probably disappearing more and more. I'm sure some of the families are keeping stories alive. The great thing about Melvin Brown we talked about is that his daughters at least were willing to come forward in video. And who was the man that interviewed his daughters? Do you remember that, Art? What was his name?
Can't remember that. You're talking about the one that's on the YouTube, but there's quite a few people have witnessed the Browns. It's been more than just him. The researchers have. I know they've got recordings of interviews with him. I think the key ones, okay. Kevin Randall, Donald Schmidt, maybe. Yeah.
Okay, so quite a few people have interviewed the girls. And there's mainly one or two that speak on behalf of their father?
Yes. Well, Harriet and Beverly and Harriet are the main ones, and then the wife, Ada. The third sister, she's never talked to the researchers.
And so those of you that maybe listen to our other show, if you have or have not, just to kind of refresh here, how did this all fall into your lap? How did you get involved in researching this?
Well, I don't want to dwell too much on the previous shows, but Mike Brown was in my grade school, my sixth grade class, and he kind of spoke up, and he wanted me to meet this man at the time that he kind of made it sound like it was his dad, and he didn't want to talk, he didn't want to shake hands with me, and then I met two sisters with British accents, and you know, a lot of talk of UFOs, crash UFOs from him at the time, and he moved out of town. There was always kind of a mystery about him, which I was always inquiring about. And then when Roswell became famous, well, at least when I caught on to it in the late 80s and then more in the mid-90s when the Browns came out with their testimony, when they started talking about Melvin Brown, it sounded a lot like the stuff that Mike Brown talked about, that he was a crook and all that. And then even Beverly, I remember her talking to her, and she was a very similar appearance to who was in this interview. So, you know, all in all, I started to investigate it, and I kind of got drawn more into it as I went along. And as I dug more into their interviews, I found there's a lot of holes and a lot of things that are not quite right about Melvin from their testimony. And so I got his military records, and that was what I want to cover here mostly today is the military records, because there's a lot of mystery to that. There's a lot of things about Melvin Brown that people don't know about out there.
So Melvin Brown, you believe, could have been the father of the boy you met, Mike Brown, back in the early 70s, and although you never really did get introduced to him. And what you didn't mention also is that, and we talked about this in one of the previous shows so people can talk about it, but you did eventually meet up with Mike Brown again when he was an adult, about a year before he passed, maybe?
Correct, and he denied all this, and he denied the British sisters and everything else, and then he passed away. So that's just it. I mean, all this time, and TJ, tell everyone, too, that you and I have been talking about this for years. I've been talking
right
to you maybe about 7 years now on this,
yeah.
And I was hoping, and you kept wanting me to come on the show and talk about this whole thing, and I was hoping that first off, I would solve some of the mystery to this, and secondly, that I would establish some type of proof, and then I was hoping that I would get some collaboration from the Brown family on this, but none of this, doesn't look like any of this is happening, and as the years go by, and especially now with Mike Brown passing away, and now we're at the 70th anniversary of Roswell, I just figure it's time to get on your show and talk about this, and at least show some things on Melvin, and I provided you with some military records when mm-hmm. he was at Roswell, and I want to talk about that, too. There's some pretty interesting things on there.
You know, for a guy that was just supposedly a cook, right? He was a cook in all this, and all
yes.
these different, but he also, you said he was like a marksman as well?
Yes. One thing he was very good was the M1 gun, which is like a rifle.
Mm-hmm.
It has this random. So you basically do. You've got a cook that's pretty good with a gun.
Well, you said, go ahead.
The whole thing was that they asked him, you know, this Roswell thing happens, and you just spontaneously grab people you can grab, and he happened to be one of them, you know, and they asked him to guard the area, and he did. He was actually involved with two things at Roswell. He guarded the truck that had the alien bodies on it, and he also guarded the hangar, the airfield where the crates were held. So there's two places he guarded related to Roswell, and this is right out of the books, right out of the Roswell books. So they're pretty specific on what he did.
And so
you got a cook that's good with a gun. So they asked him to guard this area, and he guarded it. That's basically, I think, what happened. That's how they describe it.
You know, but we're also, as you were looking at, and you were telling me a little bit about his history and the different places he went, he wound up being in a lot of places that, almost like special forces, like he was somehow connected to these, you know, this was not something the average soldier would be involved in, right?
I don't know, it's hard to say. I just know he was a cook and he was always with elite groups, which we can get into here. But you asked a question on the last show, and I want to cover that now, because I couldn't think of the top of my head, but you asked what rank and grade he was, okay? He was a Staff Sergeant E-5. This is right out of his FOIA papers. I believe this is probably his last ranking in the service. And an E-5 is somewhere in about the middle of the military sergeants, from what I could tell from the pay scales and stuff.
And he... What year did you know what year he finally stepped away from being in the military?
1964.
And what year?
Let me go a little bit into that here. He was born on October 14th, 1916, in Butte, California. Him along with his twin brother, Marvin. Okay, I did some math here. Around Roswell time, he was 31 years old in July 1947. So he was not a kid. He was already in his 30s when this occurred. All right, United States Air Force retirement, 1964 is when that happened. He was 48 years old at that time. When I thought I met him, he was 55 years old, and he passed away in 86 at the age of 69. Okay, I don't know if you want me to keep going or not, but 1930 census, he came from a very large family in California. Based on the 1930 census, he had four brothers and one sister. And it sounds like he also had another brother after the 1930 census. Okay, he started the Army December 11th, 1939. He would have been at age 23 years old at that time. Based on the 1940 census, Melvin was stationed, this is what I believe would have been boot camp. This would have been Fort Rosecrans, San Diego, California. And his twin brother was at Stevenson Military Reservation in Oregon.
Okay.
Okay, Melvin's duty during the early Army days was Coast Artillery, and as we already talked about, he's pretty good with a gun. He participated in the Solomon Islands Campaign and the Pacific Theater during World War II. So he's a World War II veteran.
Wow.
And him and Jesse Marcel both, maybe not together, I'm sure they may not even known each other at the time, but they both did participate in the Philippine Liberation Campaigns as part of the World War II. He discharged from the Army December 2nd, 1945. This is from Timothy Good's book. This is about the only document I've seen of Melvin Brown as far as military records. And this is at Fort MacArthur, California.
Okay.
Which is San Pedro, California, that I talked a little bit about on the previous show.
Right.
He enlisted in the Army Air Corps the very next day, December 3rd, 1945. Now, the Army Air Corps was the preliminary Air Force. It was still Army at that time, but they called it the Army Air Corps. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that.
That came from Accessory.com when I was checking out things there. Military occupation is cook, qualifications expert M1 carbon rifle. Oh, one thing about witnesses. I don't know if you're familiar with the Roswell movie, 94, where they kind of duplicate the whole Roswell event with the movie. Melvin was the actor.
I think I do recall that, yes.
Melvin was played by actor Peter Randon in that show. Okay.
So he's big enough to have a part in a movie, part of this, right?
He was a basic witness, and he did play a role in that movie. Hmm. I think his first witness is that. Well, yeah, you're very right. I mean, you've got a very valid point on that. Why is he a primary witness when the public has never heard his word on it? It was all through the family, and that's a very valid point. And I further question their accuracy on a lot of this, and not only because of my experience from the past with Mike Brown, but I now having his military records, I see a lot of holes in their testimony and a lot of things that are just suspicious.
And when you say suspicious, what do you mean? You think are they lying deliberately, or are they withholding, or what do you mean by that?
I think they're steering away from one thing. I don't think they wanted to name the bases that he was stationed in England. Chick Sands in Scotland, for sure. They never mentioned those bases in England. And even it's questionable how the wife met at a dance in 1948 in Bobington when he wasn't even on British soil at that point. So there's a lot of things missing, and there's inaccuracies in some things. And I've already talked about some of that, and I want to cover some more when we get into the documents here.
And this really, really, if you're listening to this for the first time, this stems from the fact that Art feels he was lied to by the family when he tried to bring up Mike Brown. And did you speak with either one of the sisters?
I got a phone message from Beverly Brown from email correspondence. I was trying to correspond with her email license. She left me a message, and she just denied it. She was pretty mad, and that kind of did steer me more to get to the bottom of this. And I wanted to find out everything I can about Melvin, too. Just curiosity. I guess as I got into this, I got drawn more into it, if that makes any sense.
Well, sure. It's a fascinating tale. You may have met a guy that was the cook at Roswell. How many people can go around and say that in their life, that they met somebody that witnessed something truly amazing, that really, you know, if Roswell's true, which I believe it is, but when the truth comes out about that, imagine how things are going to change on this planet. Imagine what's going to happen. We're going to see things in a different light, and people won't start believing that there are beings on other planets that have been interacting with us. And they've been doing it for a long time. I don't think these beings that showed up at Roswell are the first one. This has been going on for a long, long, long time. So the world is in for quite a shock. And they call that, you know, the day when they release that to us. There's a term they're using for it. Do you know what I'm talking about? Isn't there a term that they're using when they do finally show themselves to us, these beings? Maybe you haven't heard that before.
Not offhand, no.
Okay. So some people are saying that disclosure is going to come pretty soon. And some people are saying it's going to happen fairly soon, that there's an agenda to put this forward to make us aware. And other people said, no, it's not going to happen. And I don't know which one is right. I'm hoping it's soon. It would be kind of cool. But I don't want, you know, do you think people are going to panic if they find out that this is all true?
No, but I mean, I don't know how the government's going to tell you us that, hey, you know, we've lied to you for the last 70 years. All this stuff really did happen, and we couldn't tell you. And all the stuff that Steve Bassett's been doing out there with the reporters and with politicians, and he can't get anywhere with this disclosure. I don't see how it's going to happen. And he's been at that for quite a few years now.
Yeah, you might be right. But maybe there are forces behind the scenes that we're not aware of that are even more powerful that are working things. You know, if they truly, let's say we're being visited, they truly have superior technology. I don't care what we have. They're way ahead of us. So if they said, if they told our government, and I've heard people talk about this, I don't know if I believe it 100%, but if they told our government, you will reveal that you've been working with us and you will disclose the truth to the public, then I think our people that are in charge wouldn't have a choice at that point, you know? They'd pretty much have to. So some say there are those working behind the scenes to bring this forward. I guess that remains to be seen. So Melvin Brown, pretty fascinating man, and a hero too, right? I mean, he's had a pretty amazing career.
Yes, I must get into it. I provided you with some documents, which are right out of the FOIA papers, and these are his military assignments.
Okay.
And a lot of this is handwritten. So what I provided you, I have the original document on the left, and on the right, I have what's typed in red as my deciphering of what that writing is. And I would say most of it I'm pretty confident on reading it properly. There are some things I'm guessing on, but most of it I think I've got interpreted quite well. And this is from looking at this and studying for quite a few years now. But there may be some things I have wrong here, but I think most of it I've got accurate. And if you go through this here, there's a lot of Roswell, you know, entries for Roswell. And, when I got this, I think, and this is all from National Archives from St. Louis, and this is a follow-up from me getting his obituary, and then even with his obituary, nothing on in the newspaper obituary on his Air Force. There was nothing stated on there, so even his obituary is kind of suspicious, so I had to further get more stuff. I had to get his death certificate, his SS number, and a lot of other things to be able to get these records, which I finally did get, but it took a long time to get these records. And as you see here, I gave you two entries, or shall I say two tables of his assignments, and there's overlap on them. And what I think they are is they're different records that were kept at that time, and they look like many, many generations of copies. As you can tell, they're kind of hard to read. So anyway, in red is what I've got written, and then I'm going to go in some detail on that. Now, did you get a chance to go look at any of this, TJ, or not?
I just looked at it briefly. I didn't really spend too much time on it. But feel free to elaborate on what, you know, what that is.
Well, let me go with the top chart to start with. 19, and by the way, I grabbed the two that are focused around Roswell, because that's what most people are going to be interested in. I've got a lot more of this, but I wanted to concentrate on that, and that's what I think most people are going to be interested in anyway. But the first entry on here is 1946, and it says Camp Kilmer. Now, Camp Kilmer is where they process people for overseas, where they prepare troops for overseas. So it looks like Melvin, they were preparing for overseas, but for whatever reason, after that, he was stationed at Roswell. Now, maybe because he was in this 509th bomb group, which does a lot of testing, and he will later on do testing elsewhere, that might be why he got this overseas preparation ahead of time. That may be a standard that they have. And, now you'll see 509th bomb group on there, which is a very famous bomb group, and that's the group that Jesse Marcel was in.
And when you say testing, you're talking about nuclear testing?
Yes. And I can get to that here. He was involved with Operation Sandstone. And this is between his Roswell entries. In February 1948, he was involved with Operation Sandstone, which is a nuclear bomb test in the Pacific Islands. And it's very famous, and if you look on the Internet, they may have 10K to up to 20K people involved with that bomb test. There was a lot of people. there's a lot of mouths to feed, and he wasn't involved with a cook, being a cook on that as well. And the previous test of that was Crossroads. And Crossroads was also a famous test. And just to mention it here, because Commander Roger Ramey, who's very famous for covering up the Roswell stuff, he was responsible for the Crossroads bomb test. That was run by the Air Force. This Operation Sandstone, I think, was run by the Energy Commission, and I think the Air Force was more of a support for that. But anyway, Melvin Brown was there. He was there in the Pacific Islands for that, in the middle of the Roswell entries. So anyway, it looks like he was at Roswell from 1946 up to 1948 with Operation Sandstone in the middle. Now, here's what's suspicious. It looks like a year, really, really close to a year after the Roswell event. It looks like he was in the hospital at Roswell. That's what his records show here, that he was a patient there. And by the way, RAAF is Roswell Army Airfield, which is in his records as well. And then they changed that name, I think, when shortly after Air Force took over. I think they changed the name to Walker Air Force Base, which is also on his records. But it appears that he was at the hospital at Roswell.
And what do you speculate? Didn't we speculate a little bit that maybe had something to do with what he witnessed or was a part of?
I don't know, because let me tell you a little more. It first appears that he was at the hospital at Roswell. Then it looks like he was transferred to Texas, El Paso, Texas. And there's this initial WBGH in his records. And I've looked that up, and I tried to find out what that is. And that's William Beaumont General Hospital. It's a big hospital in Texas, very famous for military in the 1948 time period. The William Beaumont General Hospital, which is a big, famous military hospital in 1948, he was taken there. And that place changed their name to William Beaumont Army Medical Center. And I contacted them because there's an entry right after this in Melvin's records that's DPTMNTS. And I asked them, what would that possibly stand for in someone's military records? And they contacted me back, and they says Department of Behavioral Therapy Patients. So the question is, okay, so Melvin was in the hospital first at Roswell a year after the incident happened, and then transferred to Texas, El Paso, Texas. Why? What is this? This behavioral therapy? And I mean, we can ponder on this. I don't know. I mean, is it counseling? Did the witnesses get special counseling? Were they extra therapy for them to keep quiet, not to talk about this stuff?
I can't imagine that they, you know, they can't imagine if they witnessed what we all believe they did, like many believe. You know, they went through some kind of program to get them to either accept it or not believe it or have it told that you cannot talk about this. And it had to be traumatic for every one of those guys, really. Most of those guys, did they even believe that there was life outside in other worlds? Just imagine back then, things were a little more innocent and naive. At least they appeared that way. And then to find out in a day that there actually is other life from other planets and we recovered it. That would be a huge shock, wouldn't it?
I think especially in 1947, 1948, definitely. So, I don't know if it's now, but back at that time, probably, yeah, I would say so.
And then, you know, our world would kind of be turned upside down if you believed in all the things you did back then. So. And obviously there's not the media that we have now to cover all these events that go on, or the internet. So I got to believe that they went through a long process of rehabilitation or brainwashing or whatever you want to call it. Go ahead.
Yeah, and this occurred before him going overseas, which would be the next step. But one thing to mention here, Beverly talked about Melvin being stationed in Texas. And these records don't show he was ever really stationed there. He was a patient in the hospital there instead. So maybe some of this Melvin might have kept to himself. He may have not even told his family about some of the stuff he had to go through. You know, that their stuff. He may have never discussed it with them. Who knows?
So why would she say that he was stationed in Texas? Why is that something that she's claiming?
Well, maybe they're more, I suspect they're maybe because Melman talked about being in Texas or maybe described Texas to her.
Okay.
And she might interpret it that he was stationed there. And I'm just saying that he may have not told her that type of detail.
Okay. Well, that makes some sense. That's a possibility as to why. You know, it's too bad we can't talk to him now because there's things, obviously, any of those people that were from that time, things that they knew that most of them took with their to their grave. And, you know, Melvin, the only reason his daughters know is because he had the conversation with them. Otherwise, nobody would know about it, would they?
Yeah, correct. One thing that I has always bothered me about the interviews, though, Harriet's pointing at Melvin's picture in the yearbook, in the Roswell yearbook, and she says, "We know he was there. We know he was there at Roswell. Here he is in the yearbook." But then she says, "But his military records show he was somewhere else." And through the years, I have asked the researchers, what the heck is she talking about?
Mm.
And they have no idea. And now that I have his military records, there's very clearly he was at Roswell. So now maybe she's just mistaken for something on that one. Maybe she got confused with some of the other stuff. But there was nothing that they submitted to Timothy Good that, that gave any hint that he was somewhere else in 1947. So that's one of those things, those inaccuracies I was telling you about, that I'm not really sure what they were getting into on that.
Yeah, maybe it was just a misunderstanding, or maybe she's trying to throw you off the trail.
Now, when you look up, a lot of the stuff you can look up on the internet, the 509th Bomb Group is very, very famous. A lot of these squadrons that Melvin was in, like in Germany, those are pretty well documented on the internet. There's one here that's got me bugged. It's the 427th Squadron, which is in his assignments. And here's the thing. If I'm misreading that, it's three different places. I see it three different places on his document, and I can't believe I'm misreading that all three places. But anyway, I looked up the 427th Squadron. I can't find anything. The only thing I can find on the internet is that some legendary squadron that supposedly existed, but they could never prove it, and it had to do more with the Cold War. It really had nothing to do with Roswell. So I'm puzzled with this 427, and I don't know if I'm reading that correctly or not. It's one of those things to ponder on with these records.
Huh. So you're saying he could have been part of a secret elite group?
I don't know on that one. It's just, I was just surprised because most of the stuff is documented. Most of these squadrons he's in are well documented on the internet. You can read up on where they were stationed and all that. But some of the stuff is tricky to follow. And like I said, I've been looking at it for quite a while. We got APO, which is Army Post Office. That's how they kept track of where the troops were. But the problem is the APO addresses move around just like the squadrons do.
Mm.
And it gets real tricky after a while trying to figure out where all he was at, where all he was stationed at.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot to it, and I don't know how they keep track of it to begin with. You know, especially during wartime, where these people wind up, and where they maybe some of them lost their lives or were never seen again. You know, I'm sure they know, but I'd hate to be the guy that has to track all that down. That's a lot of work. So you spent how many years tracking this stuff down? 10 years?
Well, 2006 when I started. These FOI papers, I've probably had these for about 5 years now.
Okay.
I was going to put out a book, TJ, but it don't look like I'm going to find the proof or the collaboration with the family. So I've kind of given up on this book. The 70th anniversary, it's time to put this stuff out there and let people see it and study it and maybe come up with some ideas.
Maybe somebody knows somebody, or maybe an individual has a family member and they see some of this, and then you're hoping that somebody will come forward, right?
Maybe. You know what, though? I have for years been trying to contact people that knew Melvin in the 1950s. I really was. I was in fact, I've been corresponding with a with some of them that were in his group over there in Scotland and also in Chick Sands, because I was hoping to find somebody that knew him well, and I would run into some that think they knew him. They're not sure, and I kind of get the impression that Melvin was pretty quiet, kind of kept to himself, you know. He didn't, wasn't really all that open and friendly, and that's one reason why it's more difficult to find anybody that really knew him over there, and I tried. I really have.
That was the guy you met, though. Wasn't the guy you met kind of quiet and reserved and wasn't open and friendly?
Well, all he did was just sit there and not shake hands with me, not talk, but I think that's because he was in the middle of some heavy discussions with whoever was at the table with him, so I can't conclude from that anything, really.
But you do know that the one that Mike Brown, who, you know, it certainly appears that that was his son, Melvin's son, knew everything about this abduction place, which he never came out and said Roswell, but he had a lot of knowledge about UFO interactions and crashes, didn't he?
I don't know if he really gave me that much detail, but he did say, he did hint to a crash saucer right in the past, and then afterward a little bit, and then he denied it, then he didn't want to talk about it anymore, and I don't know if he gave me a whole lot of detail or anything. I wish he did. I wish I would have got more detail, but it was just real brief. Anyway, 86 Fighter Wing is another interesting thing from a station in Germany. And actually, he won some medals, and one had to do with the Berlin airlift. Does that ring a bell?
Yeah, that was in the, right after World War II, I believe, when the Russians tried to basically keep the Allies out, and they were not going to let, I don't know if they were going to starve the people, but they were going to block. And we actually dropped food in. The Allies dropped food. Because I think after World War II, they broke Germany into four sections. And the United States and France and Britain gave that section back to Germany. But I think they also broke Berlin, if I'm wrong. I could be wrong on this. Broke that into four sections because that was the capital city. And those three countries, again, gave it back to the people and to the government. But the Russians, the Soviets kept that in the communist bloc, and I think they tried to block off the whole city because they didn't want us to have control of that. The rest, we really didn't. We just, or maybe we did, but I just believe, that's what I recall, that there was that airlift.
You know, TJ, it's funny you said that. As you're saying that, I'm reading my notes here. He was in the 86th Fighter Wing shortly, and that's where I think he got the award, and that was around the 1948-1949 time range. Mm-hmm. But then from there, he went into the 3rd Air Division. And I have right here that the 3rd Air Division participated with the Berlin blockade, which sounds like what you're describing.
Yeah, and that would have been what, early 50s, late 40s, early 50s?
Still late 40s.
Okay.
And then I have here that he would eventually move to South Ruislip, England, which happens to be near London. So I guess that's where this 3rd Air Division kind of ended up afterwards.
So he really was involved in a lot of historical things. Isn't that just kind of a strange coincidence when you talk about the atomic explosions? I mean, that at one time was a very big thing in our history. The Berlin airlift, Roswell. He was kind of, like, maybe, I don't know if I'd say fortunate, but he was in the right place at the right time more than once in his career.
Certainly. The pattern I see with Melvin Brown was he was a crook, always with elite groups. There always seemed to be elite groups that were doing something. And speaking of that, I went on quite a few wild goose chases, and I know I told you some of them, but one of them I had. I do know, let's go back to Alpena, Michigan for 1 minute. I do know that somebody was stationed there that afterwards was stationed up way up in Alaska, Shemya Islands, the Aleutian Islands, where they were monitoring the Russian aircraft.
And you're saying someone, you don't know if it's Melvin.
No, it's not Melvin. It's, but I know, I was telling you about the mystery about how Alpena, Michigan base really had no connections, but I'm just saying I know somebody that was stationed there that,
oh,
that
I see.
Was stationed there afterwards. But here's the thing. I read up on that, And what got me going is that mission is very similar to the mission Melvin's group had in Scotland, where they're monitoring Russian aircraft. So that got me thinking a little bit. And then when I further read into it, the Northwest Airlines they're the ones that furnished all the food in Alaska at those bases at that time in the early 70s. And I'm starting to think, well, here's a perfect job for Melvin. A perfect civilian job for him would be that. And I tried to pursue that for a while, but I couldn't find any connection. I couldn't. See, I assumed that maybe Melvin was in Alpena, like maybe a preliminary step before maybe being stationed up in Alaska.
That's interesting.
The Northwest Airlines providing the food is what really got me going. I thought I was onto something there, but I could never find anybody that really knew any connection to that, so I kind of gave up on it. It's just one of those goose chases I went down on this.
Right. I understand that you were trying to cover every angle to find out more about him, and you wanted to prove to yourself that this truly was Melvin Brown, the man that was a witness at Roswell. And that just had to eat away at you, didn't it?
Yep, it does. And there's another goose chase, too. Another mystery. An untold story. Maybe I should word it that way. It's another, seems like an untold story of Melvin. In 1958, November, all of a sudden he was discharged from the service. And they give a real weird COG number. COG is convenience of government. It's basically the honorable discharge of someone. And then he reenlists the very next day back in the service.
Same branch?
And I can't, same branch, same place. But then the entry after that is Scotland. Now, this happens to be, if I use Mike Brown's birth date, this happens to be 7.5 months before his birth. That's what got me going, because I can't figure out, but I do have a code number for the CLG, and I have been trying to figure out what that code number means, and I've had some FOI papers on that, trying to figure out what that is.
So what this sounds like to me, and I think we talked about this before, is that, I'm just going to throw this out there as speculation, is that Melvin found out his girlfriend was pregnant, right? And then he moved to Scotland. He got out of the military, and then somebody convinced him to stay in it or re-enlist in it. And then he was transferred over there. And I think we both kind of speculated that maybe his wife caught wind of it, or maybe he had to tell somebody, or I don't know to what extent, if he was truly having an affair, which is obviously what they're trying to cover up. And if it's 7.5 months, you know, how long does it take before people know that they're pregnant? And generally it's after a month or so, right? A woman will know. So kind
of. Well, I know now the tests they run now are pretty accurate.
Oh, yeah, in a short period of time.
In the late 50s, I don't know if they could really tell right away until, you know, at least a month later or so. So that's a good question. That one's got me going. It's just a coincidence, probably, like many of the other coincidences that I've been chasing down. But that one's got me pondering a little bit. And there is a number from the COG, and I thought that number would represent something, and I've not been able to find that out.
Yeah, well, that's just one of the, you know, one of many things that probably are going to be left open-ended, aren't they?
And probably always will be. But studying the history of these military records is pretty fun. And, I've delved a lot more into history than I knew. You know, I never really knew much about World War II before digging into this.
What's kind of cool is how you've uncovered really a lot of the history that, you know, a lot of people probably missed, you know. And it's amazing that Melvin in some ways was a part of so much of it, you know. He's like that, what was that one movie where the guy, well, I guess you could even look at like the Tom Hanks movie, you know, where he plays that one character and he's involved in so many different parts of history, Vietnam, you know, and then he meets the president. You know what I'm talking about? Life is a box of chocolates, you know? Remember
that? I know what you're talking about now. I can't think of the name.
But he was in that movie, and he's in the riots. They show him in the 60s. You know, he's involved in all that stuff. So, yeah.
Anyway, there was a time I was going to put out a book. I've actually written a great deal for a book on this, and because nothing kind of, I can never prove it, and I can never get collaboration. I just kind of put it down. But again, this 70th anniversary coming up, I owe it to you, TJ. You've listened to me for hours talking about this stuff and other things, and I just want to be on your show. This is
well, I think it's kind of cool that you. You know, because for a while there, you just didn't want to come on, and you kept saying, well, I don't have evidence. And I thought, well, someday, Art, you may pass away, no offense, you may pass away, and we will never get to hear what you found. And I just think the fact that you probably met a guy who was stationed at Roswell and was a witness to alien bodies and crashed UFOs, how many people get that opportunity? And if they do, they're probably told to clam up, or maybe they disappear, or who knows, right?
Yeah. You might have some men in black at your door yet.
Both of us might. You're the one with the evidence, so I think they're going to knock on your door first, and then I'll just pretend I don't know you. Don't know him. Sorry, wrong number.
Anyway, this Melvin Brown documents I provided you, it will be cool to get those out. And by the way, the latest news as of I think today is there's more MJ-12 documents coming out very soon. I guess the researchers are looking at that stuff right now.
And these are documents from Roswell?
I don't know what. Well, they relate to something on those regards, but I'm not sure exactly what. Some of the MJ-12 documents that came out, some of them are really far-fetched. I don't know how much you know on that stuff, but I don't know if I believe it all. You know, I believe some of it, but not all of it.
Well, there's a lot to it, from what I understand. It's not just Roswell, but MJ-12 is a certain group of people that were involved in a lot of secret things that were going on. And so they had their hand in probably anything that was top secret or something that people were not aware of. So it could be a lot of stuff, you know. I mean, there was stories. I think you and I talked about this. I heard stories that MJ-12 was a part of this as well, that there was a swap of people for beings that took place in the 60s, I believe, and then we sent X amount of our people to a planet, and then they left some of their beings behind here. You know what I'm talking about, that project? Have you heard about that?
Yeah, I can't think of the name. I know what you're talking about, and I'm not sure what to believe of that one because I don't think there was a whole lot of witness support on that. It might have been one person, wasn't it?
Yeah, there probably weren't too many that were allowed to speak about that, but supposedly
people came out with that. I might give a little credence to it, but that one I had a problem with. You know, people can hear me talk on here about Melvin Brown and Mike Brown, but I am still very much a skeptic on a lot of this. Because there's a lot of it out there that is fake, and that's what makes it real challenging and real difficult to just, you know, sort it out, what's really true and what isn't. And
well, you know what you witnessed, right? You talked to Mike?
Yeah.
You, Mike Brown.
That's it. I reflect back to grade school when this kid was so excited and he wanted me to go home with him and talk to this guy about this stuff. I just reflect back on that. But that's childhood. But I mean, I do, you know, I remember it like it was yesterday. And, you know, it makes me ambitious to try to find the truth on this stuff. So it has influenced me in a lot of ways, really, through the years. And
well, if it happened to me like that, too, I'd probably still be seeking to talk to somebody or find out as much as I could. You know, and everything I think happens to us in life to move us forward, to, you know, how many people do you know that have had something happen in their life and it changed the course of their life for the remainder of their life? And I think this is what, you know, we all have these potential wake-up calls that come along that can lead us to finding greater answers, greater truth. You know, that's what my show is all about, is helping people release get that out, because I think a lot of it is either deliberately hidden or it's been forgotten or covered up or whatever the case may be. So that's what I'm always interested in, those kind of things. I'm endlessly curious. So when you told me about that the first time, Art, I'm going, wow, this is fantastic. And I'm going, you got to talk to me. And I obviously I didn't put it like that, but I said, oh, would you love to come on and talk about it? No, TJ, no. And so I didn't.
Well, we've had a lot of fun talking about that and a lot of other things. There's got to be at least 50 shows we could have put out, you and I, with all the talking we've done.
Exactly,
through the
years. Exactly. And, you know, that's what this show is about. It's more just more conversational. And it's like, you know, when you call me at my house, that's what we're doing there, right? Except I joke around a little bit more. I come up with little crazy ideas, you know, just to get you to laugh, because that's what I like to do, is get people to chuckle a little bit. But on my show here, it's a little more laid back. And I know this is serious for you, so I'm not going to keep making jokes. Now, if we were talking about something else, maybe I'd be joking around with you a little more. Because I really think laughter is important, because we have to keep a sense of humor. One is healthy for us, but also, you know, if you didn't have a sense of humor with all that you've been through with all this, Art, right, you'd probably be a little nutty right about now, right? You have to laugh a little bit about some of the dead ends and things that have happened, right?
Yeah, you know, it's been fun, though. It's been fun trying to find, I got blinders on. I'm looking at Melvin Brown. I do pay attention to the rest of Roswell to some extent, but not that much. It's Melvin Brown. I want to know everything I can about Melvin Brown. Mm. And there's such little bit out there. That's what's so weird about it. There's hardly anything on the internet, and there's hardly anything in the books. It's like there's a mystery cloud around this guy anyway. So, I mean, it gives me all the more I want to go out there and try to find out what I can. And I've made contact with some people that it's think they might have known him, but all those years, they're not sure. And most of them are died off now. It's difficult to find people.
True. Yeah. It's kind of, and that's kind of
service at that time.
It's kind of how the government does things. If people witness things, you know, they get them to be quiet, or they, you know, if you're a civilian and you witness something, they do a campaign to smear you through the press. And then eventually people stop talking, and eventually those people die off, and boom, nobody knows what happened in our past. All these things are left behind. Now, granted, Roswell has survived because of people have spoken up, and maybe it was something they wanted us to know about, but there's still is speculation about what really happened there. So you have a piece of history, a big piece of our history. You know, someday we're going to look at disclosure as one of the biggest things, don't you think? When that happens, the day that it happens, it's going to be considered one of the biggest things that we've ever had released, the information as far as part of our history. And the real truth about it. We're going to realize there might be many things we realize. We might realize that our origin is not from this planet, and that maybe some of us or different races came from different places, or maybe initially they seeded us here, some of the different races. So there's a lot of truths that could really alter our past and what we believe of our past. That's what I see. And I'm open to all of it. I think there's a good chance there could be truth in all of it. You're not as open to it as I am, I'm guessing, right?
I'm pessimistic on the disclosure. Like I say, everything that Steve Bassett has been doing for quite a few years now, and that doesn't get the ball rolling. I don't know what will. But what was interesting recently, Robert Bigelow, who's involved with a lot of the future programs for the public to go out in space. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody asked him on, I think it was 60 Minutes, about UFOs and if he believes in them. He says, yeah, they're real. Yeah, they're definitely real. They're around us. And I'm just wondering, when we start going out in space and we see the same weird stuff, and all of a sudden, well, you know, what's this? What's this we're seeing now? You know, it's still back to the government lying all these years. They couldn't even come out with the truth on this.
Right. Sooner or later, though, I truly believe, that they are going to do that, that the truth will come out. I think we're heading, you know, from where I'm sitting with the people that I have on my show who are psychics and mediums, and a lot of them are saying that we're coming into this time of transparency, where we've been lied to, not just by our government, but for thousands and thousands of years. And we are coming into a greater awakening. The earth is changing. We are changing. And we're no longer going to be prisoners of lies. So we will eventually gain our freedom. And our freedom is the truth. And realizing that there's so much more to who we are and where we came from and what's been going on this planet for thousands and thousands of years. Do you believe that maybe, you know, obviously you believe there are alien beings that visit us, right? Roswell's real to you?
Yes, to some extent, yes.
Do you believe that they've been probably visiting us for a long, long time?
Yes, I'm a fan of Eric von Däniken. I read his books when I was a kid also. And yes, I believe they've been visiting here for thousands of years.
You think that they gave us technology like they suggest in Ancient Aliens?
I don't know about that as much. Giving us technology from back at that time?
Well, from thousands of years ago. Some of the things that, you know, like they built the pyramids. How did the Egyptians actually do that? I don't believe the Egyptians did. Some of the technology that goes back thousands and thousands of years, we would have a tough time duplicating. So, even in this day. And so I think, were they influencing us in our ancient civilizations?
Yes, most certainly. And the pyramids, too. They might have assisted with the pyramids some way.
So I look at all of that, and that means that they've probably been, maybe in some cases, they created some of the races that are here. Do you think that's possible?
Yes.
Okay. Because I kind of have a theory that all the races that are different, you know, the theory that we all came from Africa and we moved across the planet, and then, you know, if we lived in certain areas, our skin got a different color. I just don't buy that. It doesn't make sense to me. I see it more as we all came from different planets. That's why we're all different, you know, and belong to different space brothers and sisters. Does that seem a little weird?
Yeah, definitely. There may be something to that. Even though I would think DNA would point to it, the discrepancies with...
Perhaps so. And they say that our DNA can kind of be traced back to our earliest ancestors in Africa. So maybe that is true. But I always kind of thought, well, maybe there's, you know, some of the people that are here on this planet. You know, Hitler believed that they came from that an alien race. The Germans came from the Aryan race, which was an alien race. He thought it was a superior race. And that's what he was trying to do, was reclaim the planet because of he believed that he came from this. And I believe that he may be right that they came from an alien race, but was not any more superior than anybody else that's here. We're all, when it comes right down to it, we're all the same. So I think there's some truth in what he, even as weird as and messed up as the guy was, there might have been a little bit of truth in that. There was also rumors that the Germans had recovered a crashed disc. Do you ever hear about that?
Yeah, I know there's a story from the Germans and there's a story from the Russians, and I don't know if it's all as many witnesses and proof as Roswell has, but I do recall seeing this stuff on the videos, yes.
Hmm. So what else do you want to tell me about Melvin? Is there anything else that you want to let me know that we didn't cover? I'm sure there's a lot more that you would like to talk about.
Well, you know, I kind of went through it real quick and real brief, and now I'm kind of backtracking to see if I missed any key things. I wanted to focus mostly on the 40s with when he was stationed at Roswell. He was in elite groups. He was in the 509th bomb group at Roswell, very famous bomb group. He was an 86th fighter wing, which was related to Berlin and Germany. 3rd Air Division, which is related to Germany, and then Rusilip, England. Rusilip, England was a base near London. And then he was in the 7500th Air Base Group, which was also involved with Rusilip, England. And then he was part of the USAF SS. That's the United States Air Force Security Service. That's what he was involved with in Chick Sands, England, and Kirk Newton, Scotland. And they were monitoring Russian signals there. And I think both places had one of these big array of antennas. It's in a circle. I think they used to call it the elephant cage. You ever read up on any of that, TJ?
No, I don't know what that is.
But that's to pick up the radio waves from Russia. And then I know they had people interpreting some of the signals, and they had quite a crew up there. But, yeah, Nolan's always been a cook for the very elite groups of the Air Force. That's how I could summarize this whole thing, basically. And it's a very impressive background, very impressive. So when people say, oh, he was just a cook, and I know what they're after, you know. Well, how could just a cook, you know, guard something like Roswell? You know, they're expecting somebody that's got extra special security approval and all that. But they were in a hurry. They just grabbed who they could, and Melvin was who they grabbed. And he was, you know, he's not a kid. He was already in his 30s when Roswell occurred. And
well, not only that.
Yeah.
If this is the first disc that the government finds, and a lot of these guys probably don't even know that that exists, can you imagine? Because the first newspaper reports said that we had recovered a crashed disc, and then, you know, Jesse was told to change his story. So they had to be shocked and caught off guard as well, one would think, right?
Yes, yes.
And then once the brass found out about it, it's a weather balloon, okay? Sure, looks just like one.
Yeah, I got a thing for that. Only a buffoon would believe in the balloon. It's one of my phrases. But, there's something to this. And after all these years, it would be nice for something to come out of it.
Well, we're just going to have to channel Melvin's spirit one of these shows. What do you think?
I don't know. You know, we talked about that, too. I something drives me sometimes. And I for the longest time, I thought it was Mike. I thought something happened to Mike, and I thought he was driving me to get to the bottom of this. But I don't know. Maybe it's Melvin's spirit. I don't know. Something's driving me to find the truth and get to the bottom of this thing.
You know, that wouldn't be in, from where I sit, that wouldn't be the most ridiculous thing, because I think there are those, usually though, when somebody passes away, whatever happens here is not really a big deal, and they kind of forget about it and move on. But maybe there's other ones that are trying to, you know, I think there's a lot of different beings that we can't see, and it could be multidimensional. It could be spirit beings. It could be alien spirit beings that are influencing you to get this story out. Think about that. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe. Are you running any debunkers on your show? You ever have talked to any of the debunkers?
No, I don't.
The UFO debunkers.
I don't do that too much because I don't want to have a combative show. And, you know, I guess I should present both sides, but I figure people can choose to look at, you know, it's bad enough if you believe in UFOs, people will generally attack you for that. So I don't feel the need to run debunkers, even though in this day and age it's more accepted, you know, but there was a time when you didn't talk about those things because people made fun of you. I remember when I was a kid and I saw that UFO in third grade and I went and told some kids at school. My brother and I made the huge mistake of doing that because these kids played along, but they were making fun of us the whole time, you know, and it's like that's the typical mentality of the majority of people. Now it's a little different. People seem a little more open, and I think the recent research said 50% of the people, or maybe even more than that, believe that UFOs exist. So, but I won't put debunkers on because I just don't, unless somebody came on and presented in a way that was very, you know, if they were, said, well, I have evidence of this, and they do it in a way that's professional and courteous and not going to attack others, then I...
Yeah, it's good, and I'm with you on it. It's good that you do it that way. And I think of Larry King. Larry King had some good shows in the past on UFOs, but, yeah, sometimes you get these ridiculous debunkers on there, and some of them are so stupid. They really didn't even really have a valid point on their side of
right.
it.
Right, I see that a lot.
And they're just insulting, and that Philip Klass, maybe that guy did work for the CIA. I mean, I called him the Archie Bunker debunker. He was always sarcastic.
What was his name? What was his name?
Klass, Klass.
And he was always debunking. He was always the voice they went to. Yeah, there's always seems like there's one or two that are the main ones that, and you think, why are they even going out of their way to, I suppose they're getting paid by the network, but why are they going out of the way to prove that this is wrong? It's like, so what if people want to believe in that? You know, what difference does it make? So what is their purpose?
I do know Richard Dolan got a hold of one of a class's papers that I guess he found at a library up in Canada somewhere. And this is after he passed away. It was just hilarious because he was trying to discredit Stanton Friedman. And it was just, that came out. I just thought it was funny. The guy was just insulting him and trying to get, you know, people on his side. And it was hilarious.
Yeah, I think one of the most respected people when you watch his show, and even the ones that don't, I look at like the Science Channel. I watch that a lot. And they put Stanton Friedman on there. And they respect him greatly. So everybody seems to respect this guy, even though he said things that kind of, you know, some people might not buy into. But it's because he knows what he's talking about as far as the science end of it. He's a very intelligent man, so I think he's well-respected.
You know, the one I question is Hynek. A lot of people respect Hynek, but the problem I had with Hynek was he, near his final days, he was interviewing Roswell witnesses. And it's in his diary, I guess, but he never, ever spoke to the public about it. And all the debunking he did in his early years, if he would have just let the public know that he was looking at Roswell seriously, he might have gave Roswell more respect.
Well, we saw a lot of people, though, that stepped in and were non-believers and were actually probably out to prove that it didn't exist. And then when they got into it far enough, they realized, oh, there is some truth in this. And Kehoe is a good example of that, right?
Yeah, and Hynek. I guess Hynek was more convinced there was something behind it after he was forced by the Air Force to debunk it all those years. But I still think if he would have been a little more outspoken about Roswell, it might have changed matters. But he didn't do that. So
well, they probably would have gave him cement shoes if he was more outspoken. I don't know. I don't know.
Would have done that. Maybe. I don't know.
Who knows how they deal with things. There was a time I think they threatened people. Now they just can discredit him and tell him, you know, I don't know if it doesn't seem like it's as severe of a threat, but who knows? I don't know anybody that's disappeared from opening their mouth or had a mysterious illness and died or whatever. So I'm sure some of that maybe still goes on. Art, I appreciate you being on the show. Is there anything you want to close with? Because we're just about out of time.
No, I want to thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to talk. It's been an experience talking on about this stuff. And yeah, thank you. Just enjoy talking to you.
Same here. And I'm so glad that you decided to share it because it's a fascinating story, even if we can't prove it 100%. Someday there will be disclosure, Art, and it'll be during our lifetime. And we'll find
that
out.
That would be cool.
And we'll find out. And if not, maybe I can get one of my psychic friends to come on, and maybe we can find out some things about Melvin on the other side, if he's willing to share with us, that is. So, who knows? Thank you.
Yeah. Catch you sometime again.